Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach integrier- und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach integrier- und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
I have this memory from my childhood. It's one of those memories that's most likely a dream, but my recollection of that night has always been so eerily vivid. Let me explain what might have happened. There was a long period of time during my childhood when my single mother worked night shifts as a nurse. Shortly after this happened, I actually begged her to switch the day shift because my nightmares were keeping me from getting a full night's sleep at my grandmother's house. I think I was 8 when this event in question happened. For context, my grandmother only owned one TV, which was in a room, and off limits after her bedtime. Being a curious and imaginative kid, I didn't find it difficult to occupy myself without it. Grandma had a whole shelf in her study dedicated to short story anthology books. She had a lot of the general classics too, like Dracula, The Jungle Book, Jane Eyre, all kinds of novels. I ate up these stories like a ferocious little bookworm. I also discovered the alarm clock in the spare bedroom was a radio alarm clock. During these sleepovers at my grandmother's, I enjoyed tuning the clock radio to different stations. There was something about catching voices and music between the radio static I liked. I would imagine I was a spy, using my radio to eavesdrop on my enemies. With the yellow notepad, I'd scribble notes from AM broadcasts. I know that's a little weird, but hey, I was a bored kid, past the bedtime, without a TV. I had to get creative. While tuning the radio late one night, I stumbled upon the most intriguing station I'd ever found. I remember the broadcaster went by Vernon. His voice was perfect for radio. He sounded similar to Vincent Price, although his voice was lower and his inflections even more drawn out. He kept the same smooth, perfectly even tone throughout each sentence. I distinctly remember even feeling a twinge of envy when I realized he could read out loud without fumbling over a single word, something I personally struggled with. 8-year-old me was intrigued by how engaging Vernon seemed, as well as the station's content. Even though I only listened once, I remember Vernon spent much of the airtime reading letters from fans. Most of these letters were confessions of disturbing thoughts the listener were having and wanted to act on. Afterward, Vernon would gently explain how these thoughts are perfectly natural, and how it was part of the human condition to crave control, especially over something or someone more vulnerable than yourself. I remember one of these stories particularly well. My next letter is from longtime listener Gideon Miller. He began, "First, Gideon, I would like to thank you for tuning in. It's the support from our contributors that keeps our show running. I found your story most intriguing, and I'm thankful we get to share it with our audience today." Gideon writes. Vernon made a throat-clearing sound before continuing. "Dear Vernon, first off, love your show. I have never told anyone this, but I feel it's time to share with someone who won't pass rash judgment. You are always so rational and logical regarding the human need to participate in violence. I know you'll be the perfect person to share my story with. I killed a classmate of mine in high school. We were competing to be the best athlete on our school's track team. This kid, let's just call him Mark, infuriated me because I was doing track for genuine scholarship and career opportunities, and he admitted he was only doing it because his parents said either he had to play a sport or get a job. He said he figured running in circles was the easiest way to get out of work. But that wasn't the torturous part. What infuriated me the most was how much better Mark was at track than I was, in spite of how much more of a damn I gave. It was maddening to know how hard I trained, and knowing Mark would just blow off practice and still somehow pull ahead at the track meets. He set new records for the 400 and 800 meter dash. He was almost always chosen to be the anchor in relay races. Looking back, I don't blame the coaches for giving him as much attention as they did. The kid was naturally gifted. He could run like the wind. But I wanted some of that attention too. I craved praise. In my heart, I believed if I got rid of Mark, I would earn some of their affection. So, I devised a plan. I don't want to give you too much detail about what I did and where we were exactly, because I don't want your really curious listeners to go snooping for answers to mysteries that aren't any of their business. I remember Vernon gently chuckling after this line, although I myself found nothing humorous about what he was reading. Still, morbid curiosity kept me listening. I lured Mark out to a nearby lake under the pretense that we would race on the shore in order to conserve energy. I did not give my best efforts during our races and allowed Mark to win every time. After I thought he'd been drained of enough energy, I suggested we cool off by taking a swim. "No, you didn't," I thought at the time. "Please tell me you didn't actually." I drowned Mark once I determined the coast was clear. Vernon continued reading the letter. There was no hitch, no hesitation in his voice. I personally remembered needing a moment to process this story, to figure out if it was true or fake. Obviously, he was no first-timer to these kinds of stories. Calm as a cucumber, Vernon read on. He struggled for a long time, but I was committed. It was a good thing I'd taken the time to make him run off some of his power. If I hadn't worn Mark down, he may very well have overtaken me, but I got him in the end. I won. The police never found out it was me. They never even brought me in for questioning. Their investigation was so sloppy. One thing I do remember is a rumor spreading that one of our notoriously strict track coaches had done it. And although it was eventually ruled as an accidental drowning, he resigned due to pressure from parents and the staff. We had a memorial for Mark, and a guest speaker provided a presentation to our grade on swim safety. Everyone on the track team received extra leeway to excuse ourselves to the counselor's office whenever we felt like going. I felt victory after victory. Once again, I was undoubtedly the best sprinter on the track team. I pushed myself to beat Mark's records before I graduated, and I succeeded. I received a full-ride scholarship to a good college. All of these good things happened because Mark died. At least, that's how I justified it in my head. It was easy. Thank you for giving me an outlet to tell my story, Vern. As I said before, I've never shared it with anyone else. Not my parents, not my older brother, not my wife. It feels good knowing my story is out there. I don't have a lingering sense of guilt or anything. Quite the opposite, in fact. I believe my actions led me down a more fortunate path. A small sacrifice was necessary to propel me to better opportunities. I earned my place in society by offering the competition, just as nature intended. At this point, I was on the bed, covers pulled halfway over my face, hardly breathing. Gideon's story entranced me. Of course, Vernon's delivery had me hooked as well. Although Gideon only seemed concerned with the good fortune that came to him after he'd murdered Mark, I wondered about Mark's family. Did they miss him? Did his parents have other kids, or was he the only one? What was life like for them after he didn't come home that day? My own father had died in a car accident just a few years prior. I think that's why I spent a few moments pondering his family's adjustment after Mark's death. It hit a little too close at home. When I began listening again, Vernon was discussing Gideon's letter. What I found most disturbing was how quick he was to praise Gideon for what he'd done. "Gideon, your actions were merely a strategic maneuver to get yourself ahead. I congratulate you in succeeding. Society wants us to believe that it's wrong to have violent tendencies, when in fact, these are the most natural habits we possess. We praise apex predators for using their power to get ahead. Why not humans? The most successful societies are those who have overtaken others and claimed ownership of the land, and the land's resources and people. Think of how powerful we could be if we no longer forced civility, if we didn't punish ambition. Even though Vernon spoke as calmly as if he were reading off a recipe, I remember these ideas terrifying me a little bit. I didn't want to have to conquer and kill my competition. Did that mean people like Gideon and Vernon saw me as someone deserving of being conquered? Unfortunately, I did not have much time to dwell on this. Vernon's next statement quickly caught my attention. Thank you all for supporting my humble broadcast. I want to give a shout out to a first-time listener this evening. Tonight, I have Maya from Arizona tuning in. My heart felt like it sank to my stomach. Maya is my name, and I live in Tucson. I gulped. Vernon continued. Maya, I know these ideas can be difficult to wrap your head around at first. However, I am far from the first person to propose conquerors deserve the world. We are holding back our own potential by demanding politeness. If we rose up and demanded more freedom to conquer others, within a few generations, we may very well have a race of superhumans. I don't know when exactly I rose out of bed to change the station, but it was not long after Vernon began his horrific monologue about how it should be acceptable, legal even, to simply overpower and off your competition in everyday life, all while addressing me by name. But that wasn't the worst part. Like most radio clocks, we changed the station by tuning the small wheel on the side. I had had enough of Vernon and his disturbingly smooth voice. But when I moved the wheel, Vernon continued speaking. Maya, I do hope you will have a change of heart one day and tune back into my station. I've enjoyed presenting my ideas to you. I am always eager to speak to someone whose mind is as young and fresh as yours. As he talked, I remember desperately turning the wheel as far left and as far right as it would go. But no matter what, it would not change the station. Finally, I just yanked the plug on the radio clock. The room went quiet. The sound of my racing heartbeat was in my ears, but the room itself was dead silent. Letting out a long sigh, I walked over to the trash can and dropped the clock in the bin. I slid under the covers once more, attempting to clear my mind of Vernon's podcast and Gideon's letter. Somehow, I willed myself to sleep. The next morning, I awoke at my normal time, about an hour before I had to be at school. I knew what time it was, because, to my horror, the radio alarm was not in the garbage, but on the end table, plugged in, with the time set. When I left the spare bedroom, I found my grandmother at the stove in the kitchen, cooking cream of wheat for breakfast. Without a word, I sat at the dining room table. I did not ask her if she put the alarm clock back in its place, but she did not ask me why it was in the garbage. I wanted to assume she did it and never find out otherwise, so I made the choice never to initiate any conversation about it. I am almost 30 years old. This memory still haunts me. It very well could have been a dream, and that still seems to be the most plausible explanation. There were just so many little details that seemed impossible for a dream to convey so vividly. How was an 8-year-old subconscious mature enough to concoct a story about a boy killing his classmate, then justifying it? My dream brain even went so far as to give specific names. Something else I've considered is that I was in a state of dreaming where the audio from the radio or TV transfers to your dream if it's turned on. That would mean Vernon's podcast was real, but it doesn't explain how he was able to address me. I don't know, and I don't like to overthink it. What I do know is this. I don't like to listen to the radio. Even in my car, I listen to music via Bluetooth. Before that, I always had a CD playing. I've never come across Vernon or his creepy podcast again. Maybe it wasn't real. In fact, I hope it was only a morbid creation of my dreams. I hate to think Vernon is truly out there, using his platform to justify cultural shifts to pure, primal, survival of the fittest type civilizations, with no consideration for the human capacity to regard ethics and morality. But another part of me still wonders if he's out there, feeding his dangerous ideas to his audience night after night. I'll never know, because I'm too scared to tune a radio ever again.